Scott King on, you hear him? He's a good interviewer. You heard him?
No, I don't think so.
He's on CNN News now. Alan King?
I just wanted to make sure that we're coming across. I can monitor the tape this way so that I'll just leave this off to the side from time to time. The other thing is that I will be making some notes, generally writing down names of people, and if there's an unusual name, if you could spell it for me, then when we transcribe it, we'll get it correctly. This is Jim Boning of the Center for History of Chemistry talking with Malcolm E. Pruitt on January 15, 1986, at the Willard H. Dow Center in Midland, Michigan. Dr. Pruitt, you were born on October 15 in Hamilton, Texas. Could you tell me something about your parents?
Yes, my parents' name was Jesse F. Pruitt, my father. And my mother was Maddie Noxie Stone Pruitt. And they were, we were farmers. Grew up on a farm, and they had six children. I was the second of six children. And we grew up on a farm just outside Hamilton, Texas. And had very good parents, fairly strict parents, but very good parents, a good farmer, and very Christian people. And I guess generally speaking, we weren't very rich in today's standards, but we were considered the middle or elite of the community, even though by today's standards we'd probably be in the poverty level. But we had I had a good childhood, I think. I had to do a lot of hard work, which I didn't mind. So I guess I've got nothing but pleasant memories, almost, about my childhood and my parents. They both lived till they were in their 80s.
You mentioned that you were one of six. Could you tell me something about your brothers and sisters?
Yes. My older brother was a farmer and rancher in Hamilton County. My next one was a sister who married, her name was Reese, Margaret Reese, and he was a vice president of a pharmaceutical house. Lived in Fort Worth, Texas. The next two were twins, Fay and Ray. And Ray became a school superintendent in Texas and is presently superintendent of schools in Eastland, Texas. And the sister married a fellow named Bert Schrank. That's S-C-H-R-A-N-K. Who is a Gulf oil distributor in Hamilton, Texas. And they're all living except Margaret, who died this past summer from a brain tumor. Mm.
Did you receive your early schooling in Hamilton?
Yes, I received all my high school education, elementary and high school, in Hamilton, Texas.
Were there any teachers or anyone at that time in your life that had an influence on you?
Oh, yeah. I remember well my first grade teacher, Mrs. Scoggins, who I thought was just vaguely remember, but made a good impression on me. I guess that's what made me like school from then on, I guess. I had a Schauser down us, all of us. We all had to memorize Schauser, and was an excellent English teacher. In fact, I don't know how old she is now. I think she's in her 90s, but she still makes practically every high school reunion down there. She's one swell teacher. But the one who, in relating to what we're talking about, is my high school chemistry teacher, Cecil Nix, who was also superintendent of the schools of Hamilton, but he was teaching chemistry on this one course. And he inspired me. He's the one who inspired me to decide I want to be a chemist. And we didn't have a very big class. There was a few in there. And we did a lot of experiments together and a lot of talking. I liked him, and he liked me. And just in that, we didn't have too much equipment. We had to improvise a lot of it. But anyway, in that setting, that's where I decided I was going to be a chemist in my life, and never varied from it.
What about mathematics?
Yeah, I had a good mathematics teacher, a fellow named John Sullivan, who was really down-to-earth fellow, and I was very impressed with him, yeah.
When did you decide to attend Abilene Christian? Is that
I graduated from high school in 1933, right in the depths of the Depression. Couldn't have been any worse. But I was determined to go to school and take chemistry and start being a chemist. But my parents were farmers with very little money, with four children. Also, I had some cousins living in Abilene, which I could stay with. And so I stayed, the two cousins and myself, we roomed a batch together in a little house. We did all our cooking and all our ironing of our shirts and everything else, you know. But I went to school, and I never took another dime from my parents after that. Not another dime. They'd offer it, but I wouldn't take it. I made my way completely from there on. But that was hard times. But, you know, I think really that says a lot of people who grew up just like I did have turned out to be pretty solid citizens because of the, you know, you had to worry about making yourself go, or you didn't, and it was good training.
What means did you use to support yourself then while you were there?
Well, of course, we had this house, and we bought and cooked our own food, and we milked our milk. We had a milk goat we got somewhere, milked that for milk, and lived on mush and little bacon and a few other things. But ironed our own clothes, washed our own clothes in a tub. But for tuition, I worked for the school, and most of the time I worked in the extension office. That's the correspondence course, you know, where they send courses out. And I ran that office, all the mailing and duplication and that stuff, and for years, tuition. Then the later years, college, I worked in the restaurant for my food. And then I stayed in a dorm some years later, and I worked in the extension office mainly for most of my tuition and my room. In fact, I actually ran that place. You know, I had an opportunity to make a fortune when I was in college because since I had the main duplicating equipment for the university, all the teachers came to me to run their final examinations. So I had privy to every final examination in the school. Boy, did I get bribes. I could have made a fortune selling those.
If I understand correctly, you were at ACU for several years, but you didn't finish.
Well, yeah, it took me 8 years to get my BS degree. I went one full year on the scholarship and everything. I went one full year. Stayed in this house with these other two boys. Okay. Then I course, I was completely out of money. Then I came home that summer and worked in a dry goods store, David Harlick's. David Harlick, H-A-R-E-L-I-K, David Harlick's Dry Goods Store. I worked there all that summer, all that fall, and accumulated enough money, and then I went back to the spring semester. And that got me a year and a half. Then I went back right back to Harlick's and worked summer and fall again. And then I went to another springs. I got 2 years of college. Then in that day and time, you could get a temporary teacher certificate for 2 years of college. So I got me a temporary teacher certificate, and that fall I went to teaching in the Lund Valley School in Hamilton County. L-U-N-D, Lund Valley School. And I was a teacher of the 7th and 8th grades in this small rural school. By the way, very good school, little school. And I taught that way 2 years. Well, 2 years. And see, I'm not sure I went to school the first year. No, I, in the summertime, I was probably still paying back some debts I owed. And in the summertime, I would make, you remember when they used to measure the allotment for cotton planting in this, when they first started the allotment to farmers, how much cotton and wheat and stuff they could plant. But in the summers, I, for the county, I measured the farm for the cotton allotments and other allotments in the summertime. Then the third year, I became principal of this school of Lund Valley. And in that position, I had to teach woodworking. And I never had a woodworking tool in my life. So I switched and went to school at North Texas State, who had a woodworking. See, ACU didn't have one. So I took chemistry and woodworking, so I'd be able to teach that when I got back that fall. So I went there 3 summers, taking chemistry and physics and woodworking to be sure I could teach woodworking. And then in the summer of 41, I went back to ACU because I could get my degree quicker there. And took my final, all my final courses, which was a pretty heavy load, by the way, and particularly all the chemistry I needed extra, and graduated in the summer of 41 from ACU with a B.S. in chemistry.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about your experiences at ACU in the chemistry department, but before I do, let me ask you about North Texas State, since you took some chemistry there. Was there any, what courses did you take, and was there any faculty member that you remember?
Well, the one I remember most was this old Dr. Masters, which probably people know, and I think he's written several textbooks. And I took from him, let's see now, let me get my marbles straight. I took from him, I think, advanced. No, I took from him organic chemistry, a course, one course in organic chemistry. But this old fellow was a heck, he was in his 80s when he was teaching his course. And he'd stand right there and spit, you know, spit all over the people in the front seat, pedaled, you know. Very, but a very effective teacher. I was really admiring him. I took analytical and qualitative and quant, both there. I took physics there. And I remember the teacher there was a visiting professor from University of Texas, but I can't remember his name. And let's see, some more courses. Let's see, one more. See, qual and quant and organic and physics. Maybe I took 2 courses in physics, probably.
Was that your first exposure to organic chemistry, that course from Masters?
No, no. See, I think I said advanced. I don't know where it was advanced or just a different course. I took three courses in organic, I think. I took my final course in the summer of 41 from Dr. Whip. I had about three different courses in organic, and maybe they had a different name, but they were, might have been one of them been theory of something. I can't, frankly, I don't even remember now.
You mentioned Dr. Webb. Let's go back then to ACU.
The best teacher I ever had, Dr. Webb, Abilene Christian University. He was the prime teacher. They didn't have two or three teachers. The whole thing was in a little wooden shack. They called it the shack. It had a couple of classrooms and some crude laboratories. And Dr. Whip is one of the finest teachers I ever run into. Unbelievable. Simple and down to earth, but man, did he know organic, or chemistry generally, but organic in particular, with a little leaning toward biochemistry. In fact, Dr. Whip, it is said, got his PhD from the University of Colorado and discovered sulfur drugs on it, but too late to get credit. Other people got, was somebody in England?
Mm-hmm.
Got credit for it, but he had discovered the same thing on his own.
Did you do any research as an undergraduate?
Not really, no. We didn't have, we just did the experiments. Not really. Or we'd be assigned problems to do, but you know, that's not research, I don't think. More just solving a problem. So it was mostly just testing and problem solving.
Were there any other students there that you remember that went on to careers in chemistry the time you were at ACU?
No, I don't think there's anybody. Well, there was one person who was in the chemistry department, something off and on, that worked for Dow, and Sanford Thompson, who worked for Dow as a chemist, but he got more involved later into other things like safety and inventory and stuff like that. But yeah, he was in my case. I don't know of any of the others went to school with me that did great things or anything in chemistry. I think most of them was just taking it and never made a career out of it, I don't believe.
Had you heard anything about polymers before you left ACU?
No. Oh, probably might have heard the word somewhere in a textbook. I knew nothing about polymers when I went to work for Dow. Hardly knew what the word meant.
Well, when you left ACU, did you teach yet one more year?
Yeah. I got my degree then in 1941, and I didn't know of any place to try to go for a chemist job, and I was really in debt, man, you know, trying to work my way through all this, still hard times. And I got a job at Clyde, Texas then, teaching as a science teacher and assistant football coach.
Yeah.
And taught there 1 year, and this was a very pleasant experience. I really enjoyed that.
Then, of course, it was around that time that Dow was expanding in Texas. How did you make first contact with Dow?
Well, okay. Let's see. Somewhere while I was teaching, I went back home to Hamilton to visit my parents. And there was somebody there in Hamilton who told me he had read in a paper that a new chemical company was coming to Texas called Dow. and they were building, going to build a plant in Freeport, Texas. Well, you know, that was just a little conversation. I never heard of them. I didn't know hardly about anything about any chemical companies or anything. I didn't even know what a chemist did hardly. Anyway, I decided I was teaching in Clyde. On Christmas holidays, I was going to go out and start looking. And I decided to go first to Exxon. Now, I'll let you read that article. I should have brought that where old Jim Mathis, who was the senior vice president of technology of Exxon. I went down to Baytown, you know, Houston there, to apply for a chemist job with Esso. They didn't really have anything, and they really were looking for a little higher degree. I just had a BS, and if they started you, you know, they started you out in the roughneck, you know, where you worked in the blocks and fields and lifted and that. But they really didn't have anything for me. So, see, that was, remember this about Dow, which is only about 70 miles, or less than that, 60 miles down the coast. So this was the middle of the afternoon, and my dad went with me. It's me and my dad traveling. So I decided to take off down to Freeport, see what the Dow had down there. I got there just before quitting time, about like 4:30, you know, and they quit at 5. So I went into the department office, and they gave me a blank to fill out, and I filled it out, went up and handed it to them, and they said, thank you, we'll let you know, send you a job. I said, man, I've come too far to just hand you a blank. I want to talk to somebody. Well, it's too close to quitting time, and I don't think we can get anybody. I said, well, I insist. Finally, they sent me around to the personnel director, a guy named Peters, by the way. And I sat down, and he looked my blank over, and he said, well, the first thing I see wrong with you, you've just taught school too long. 6 years. That was the first thing he said to me. Well, I thought, well, that's kind of a stupid remark. But anyway, he said, well, okay, we'll file this and put it in there and let you know. I said, no, I want to talk to somebody that's got a job. I insisted. If I hadn't, I'd have never got a job. I'd just walked off and that'd been it. And this guy hummed and hawed around. Finally, he said, okay, I'll call Dr. Wright. About the only thing they had in Freeport at the time was an analytical lab. And Dr. Wright, E.R. Wright, was the head of the analytical lab in the Freeport section. So he says, he'll be coming this, it was now it was almost 5 o'clock. And he says, he'll be coming out to go home here in a few minutes, and we'll just have you meet him in the clock room, and you talk to him. I said, well, fine. I expect him to see, you know, big, dignified, well-dressed guy. You know, you never got all these images. Mm-hmm. Well, here come this guy in a little, Freeport's pretty warm, even in summertime. I think he had short sleeves on. He had his lunch bucket, little black lunch bucket. Come in, punch the clock like everybody else. And we sat over in a little corner there in the clock room and talked. But very nice man and very smart man. And we talked about, and he liked the idea about me teaching school. And he said, I think we can use you. Now we're going to open up. See, Dow put the magnesium in for Dow there to build magnesium for the planes, for the military. And then they were going 7 miles away. I don't know where you've ever been to Freeport or not. Yeah. You ought to go down there. And they were building Dow magnesium 7 miles away from the coast to get away from a submarine attack in case, you know, there was a submarine attack. And they were building a big ditch to bring the seawater up to this plant called Dow Magnesium Corporation, owned by the government. And he says, next summer, we're going to open that, and we're going to need some people, and we'd like to have you. I said, He said, when can you go to work? And I said, well, I can't go to work. I'm going to finish my school year. I'm not going to run off and leave them. So I'll be ready to go to work next June when school's out. He said, okay. And you mean you already got that all done?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, there's that the is.
Copies. I mean, that's the original. These are the copies. And I didn't know if you had those two.
Yeah, you see, you had this one, didn't you? The Site of Engineers.
Yes, I have that.
And wait a minute, I don't believe you may not have had this one. That was why I'm talk I made one time to.
No, I don't have this.
Don't have this one. These are the copies?
Mm-hmm. This is the copies. These copies
there. Okay, let me put these down there then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see, where was I?
You're going to go back and finish your school year. He wanted to know when you could start. And
oh, yeah. He said, okay, I'll let you know next spring, you know. Okay, June came, and I got out of school, so I went back to my parents. I was going to help him farm that summer if I didn't have anything else to do. So I was out on a tractor plowing farmland. My wife come running to the field and said, say, you got a letter from Dow offering you a job. This was June. So I went home, packed my duds, and headed for Freeport. Went June 24th, 1942.
What was your first position there? I have a note here, magnesium shelf dryer.
Probably the lowest position a chemist can have in the company was a control chemist on the graveyard shift, running mag. You see, what the shift guy is, they take seawater and they add lime to it to precipitate the mag hydroxide. And that's, they got big door tanks that stir, and that slush settles to the bottom. And then they pump that out and hit it with HCl. Dilute solution and make mag chloride. Then they take the mag chloride and drive off most the water in an evaporator, they call it. Then they take this semi-solid material and put it in a shelf dryer, and it's a big thing that rotates shelves, a hot air blasting up, and they dry it to about two. Well, the consistency they want for their mag cells, which is about 70% in that neighborhood. And my job was to determine when the shelf dryers, were they making the proper, see if that wasn't within a percent or so of water content, it wouldn't work in there. And so my job was to analyze Rollhard titration. You know what a roller?
Yes.
These were all wet methods. No, we don't have any of those fancy things. And roll hard titration, and that's what I did on the graveyard shift. And a lot of times, the foreman felt like he didn't pay attention to analysis. He felt like he'd go feel of it and tell you better where he's ready to go in there than I could. Then a lot of times he'd even taste it, you know. That was his method.
But how did that method compare with your analysis?
Wasn't bad. They pretty good. You know, they. I'll tell you, those guys. You know, some of these practical things and feel and eyesight are pretty slick. Those old boys that ran those things, is amazing. You know how much they know about things. You know. So.
Yes, it was the next year you moved to the analytical lab then. Is that correct?
Well, this was in the this was an extension of the analytical lab. I still worked under Dr. Wright, and he ran all these labs out in the. Well, I did that in June and started training there, and then in August of the same year, I moved over to this new plant. They opened it up, which I was hired for in the first place. Now, and I set up the lab in the shelf dryer. I actually set it up and got it running to do the analytical work for the shelf drive. And this is where I ran in, first time I ran into union jurisdiction. Of course, we didn't have much in the way of laboratory, and so I needed a funnel rack. Didn't have one anywhere, so I decided I'd just build me one. So I scrapped the lumber around there, and I had me a hammer and a saw, and I was making me a funnel rack, you know. And some guy came along and tapped me on the shoulder, and he says, "You can't do that." Well, what I thought he meant, I didn't have the ability to build it. I says, "The heck I can't, just watch me." Well, that was a union steward telling me that. I didn't know what a union steward was, never heard of a union. No, green as a gourd. Director of the superintendent came by and said, "Say, you've just upset the union steward. You're not supposed to be doing carpenter work." I said, "I'm not? Who ever heard of such a thing, you know?" Anyway, I caused a semi-grievance right off the bat. But that was my first run-in with the union. Yeah, and then I stayed there about 2 or 3 months, and then they transferred me direct up to the main analytical lab in the Dow Magnesium Corporation, where we did all kind of analysis. You know, what we call adjusting liquors, and mag hydroxide, cell feed, lime, you know, everything that's in the plant we ran. And we had a spec lab, and we had all kind of stuff up there. So I went up there, stayed about a year, and then one day